Wednesday. Good morning, Pyle, Jim, and the Buckeye Boy. It's Wine About a Wednesday with Talon Wine. Thanks again to James over at Talon Wine. Text or call us 970-242-1340. Something that is on your mind today. Driving you crazy. The use of the word literal. My head was literally exploding, right? No. Your head did not explode, okay? Literally or literal means that that's exactly how it happened. That's what happened. Not, I literally died of laughter. No, you want to say I nearly died of laughter. Fine. My head almost exploded. Fine. Or felt like it was going to explode. Fine. But your head didn't literally explode, okay? Stop using that word that way. Stop it. Don't do it. Text your calls 970-242-1340. All right, so we were also asking you today about the coaching vacancies in the NFL. Jobs that are open right now. Interviews are being conducted or set up. The Broncos, in Minnesota, in Chicago, Dolphins, the Giants now, with Joe Judge getting canned yesterday. Hey, another one of those Bill Belichick branches that didn't exactly pan out. Got Miami with Brian Flores, another one, another Belichick disciple that it did not work out. So you can text or call us 970-242-1340. Which of those jobs you think are the best? If you're a coaching candidate, which one would you have the most interest in? 970-242-1340.
If I'm going to rank them, I'm probably going to go Dolphins, Vikings, Broncos. That order, 1, 2, 3.
Just curious. I'm not criticizing. Just why would you rank them that way?
Well, Dolphins are 19-14 the last 2 years. With Tua Tagovailoa. They have a pretty decent player, Myles Gaskin, on the defensive side. They got Jaylen Waddle. They have some nice pieces. Then with the Vikings, the quarterback situation is not as muddled. Yeah, it's Kirk Cousins, but you have a quarterback this year. And, you're going to be in games. He's going to keep both teams in the game. But they finished 8-9. And they have a person at the top. There's a place where the buck stops. And those are those three things that I mentioned. The Dolphins winning record the last 2 years. The Vikings having a quarterback and an owner are three things the Broncos don't have. Say what you want about the talent on the roster. They've been under 500 for the last 5 years. They don't have a buck stops here guy at the top.
Right.
They don't have a quarterback.
At the Broncos, and we'll get to the ownership situation, the latest development on that with the ruling yesterday about the Edgar Kaiser first right of refusal that they ruled on yesterday, or the Judge Gilman ruled on yesterday. I tend to agree with you because the Dolphins have had a better record under Brian Flores the last couple of seasons. Vikings have been better under Mike Zimmer. The ownership situations, but Ziggy Wolf in Minnesota, Stephen Ross is an idiot, but at least you know who the owner is, right?
Right.
I do tend to think, though, that the ownership thing in Denver is probably being a little bit overplayed because of a factor. Well, I don't know if I want to go coach there because of the situation being what it is. You go there, you get hired by George Payton, and you win. That new owner or ownership group, they're not going to change. If you come in there and win, why would they change? And they'll have the prerogative to do that. If you fail, if you're not successful, they're going to can your butt.
Right.
And so it's going to be really, in my opinion, no different than if there's an actual owner in Denver right now, because it's going to come down to winning football games. If you win, regardless who ends up owning this team, you're going to be just fine. If you lose and you're like Vance Joseph, and if you're like Vic, then you're going to get shown the door. So I tend to think that's an overrated aspect of this whole coaching thing. Well, I don't know if I want to coach in Denver. Don't know who's going to own the team. Yeah. You're going to have to do the same thing regardless whoever ends up with this team, got to win football games. You have to do better than what Vic Fangio did, which kind of the, I mean, necessarily my final thoughts about Vic, because his name's going to still come up for a while. I do feel like Vic was the victim of someone who didn't entirely control his fate in Denver. It's John Elway, mm-hmm. not Vic, that drafted Drew Lock. Vic didn't have... Pat Shurmur played a role in Shurmur coming there, but Shurmur was also a guy that was encouraged to come in by others.
Yeah.
You look at... And the same thing with Drew Lock a little bit. When Drew Lock started to kind of turn it around a little bit, it was when Rich Gangarello was the offensive coordinator. He mm-hmm. went 4-1 at the end of the season with Drew Lock and Rich Gangarello, who's now back, obviously, with Kyle Shanahan, his buddy in San Francisco.
Right.
Maybe they pulled the trigger too quick on canning Rich Gangarello as the offensive coordinator. I don't know. We'll never know that. But that didn't help Drew Lock's development either. There are things, though, and that's something that was not entirely under Vic Fangio's control mm-hmm. entirely. And so with Vic, I do feel like he somewhat was caught up in being the head coach of the defense, right? Was his part of the ball that and it delivered. Third best scoring defense in the league this year. Offensively, like Joe Flacco was not his decision. Joe Flacco was a John Elway decision to go and trade a fourth round pick for Joe Flacco. Those were not Vic's decisions in regard to who quarterbacked his football team. And I think this time around, he did try to play more of a role in that in going along with George Payton. Hey, we want a veteran quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater's a guy we think we can come in here and win with. He's not going to turn the ball over. We feel like he'll be steady Teddy at the helm. And obviously it didn't work out the way that they hoped it would, because they hoped it would turn into a playoff appearance for the Broncos. So while Vic had, look, he had his issues, clock management, the decisions to kick field goals when, like in the Kansas City game, you got to go for it there. What are you doing kicking a field goal in that situation? That he did things that didn't help him in terms of his clock management, but there were also things that worked against him as well that were not entirely under his umbrella, under his control. Fair enough to say that there were things that did play a role that he didn't have control over?
Yeah, and it also on the other side of that, it should be fair enough to point out that there were things that were within his control that he didn't
Very
do,
true.
Like fire Pat Shurmur. When you spend
fire Tom McMahon, I agree.
When you spend 9 weeks talking about you got to get better offensively, you got to get better in the red zone, and you have to continually say that in press conferences to the media, to your own team, when you have to drive that point home, maybe you need a different play caller. And so that also needs to go on Vic Fangio's record too, that I haven't heard anything that he was told he's not allowed to fire Pat Shurmur.
Yeah.
But Pat Shurmur not getting fired, that responsibility is on everybody. Bringing him back for a second year when it obviously didn't work the first year is on everybody. And just so Drew Lock doesn't have to learn another playbook is not reason enough to continue to employ Pat Shurmur. And it showed this year.
Right. You want continuity, but then again, it seemed like Drew was kind of figuring things out at the end of the Rich Gangarello stint. And I don't know if Rich Gangarello would have been better than Shurmur. But the
couldn't
offense
have been much worse.
But couldn't have been much worse. And look, the offensive line, that took some steps back. And while we like to hail Mike Munchak as being an offensive line genius, mm-hmm. and he's done some good things there, Dalton Reisner certainly did not look like the Dalton Reisner in his rookie year.
And I'm not on
Bowles regressed, I think, quite a bit this year.
And I'm not on the new regime must keep Mike Munchak. I know there are some people that are on that. I'm not, because, yes, last year was great as an offensive line. This year wasn't. And if he's to coach up young guys and get them in, yeah, they had to use some backups and guys they drafted, but they were not a good offensive line this year, even the guys that were there week in and week out. You know, for the most part, Cushenberry and Reisner was dealing with some things, but he wasn't great. And Graham Glasgow missed a lot of time this year. Garrett Bowles regressed considerably. They still haven't figured out really what to do at right tackle between Bobby Massey and Cam Fleming and those guys. Munchak shoulders some of that blame too. You got to keep Mike Munchak.
Yeah, I think he's considered one of the best offensive line coaches, but I don't think that's something that that's the only guy you should keep. I think you have to evaluate everybody here. And look, they need to do a better job investing in the offensive line. Let's be honest, they haven't done that.
Mm-hmm.
They really haven't. Reisner, like I said, we've seen regression. Bowles, perhaps giving him the extension now is a mistake. Cushenberry, I think, is going to be fine down the road. But they still need to be better on the offensive line. And they do have some promise there with Quinn Miners, Netani Muti. I mean, there is some promise there, mm-hmm. but they have to get better up front. Something else, too, with Vic. This is on the completely within his ability to control.
Yeah.
In-game adjustments. You know what the Broncos' record was when trailing at halftime with Vic?
I believe the technical term is crappy.
1-21 would fit into that technical term of crappy.
Yep.
1-21. When you can't stop De'Ernest Johnson, third string running back for the Browns, is feeding him the football in that Thursday night game.
Mm-hmm. Top two running backs missing, top two tight ends, number one wide receiver, your starting quarterback, yep. and three offensive linemen, English is hard. When you can't beat that team, you probably don't deserve to come home and finish the season.
Very true. I just think there are things that were not in Vic's control. There were plenty of things, though,
yeah.
that were clearly within his ability to firing guys, making in-game adjustments on his side of the ball.
The stuff that he was saddled with that's outside of his control, he shouldn't have to garner the blame for that. I'll agree with you there. But all the things that are in his control are still fireable. In-game adjustments,
sure.
keeping bad assistants, you know, not willing to try anything different to maybe spark the team when you still have a chance at the playoffs. You had a litany of bad offensive assistants. You're in control of the defense, which was good.
Well, how many years is Tom McMahon? How many chances is Tom McMahon going to get as the special teams coach?
Yeah.
And how bad their special teams
Mike
were.
Mike Shula's game calling the offense, you could put in a bag and light it on fire because it was that bad. Just, I don't understand Vic's... I understand loyalty, but blind loyalty I really don't. Vic was circling the drain, and these guys were pulling him down, and he didn't bother to cut himself free.
Yeah. All right, so here's the listed candidates as of right now. These are the guys that the Broncos will interview... that they've requested file paperwork to the NFL to get interviews with. And depending on where their teams are in the playoffs, mm-hmm. of when those interviews will happen, that has to work around that. So we mentioned Gerard Mayo, Patriots inside linebacker coach. Dan Quinn, Cowboys DC. Kellen Moore, Cowboys OC. Eric Bieniemy, Chiefs offensive coordinator. Jonathan Gannon, Eagles defensive coordinator. Nathaniel Hackett, Packers OC. Luke Getsy, we mentioned him yesterday, Packers quarterback coach. Now another new name on the list, Brian Callahan, who is the Bengals offensive coordinator. Aaron Glenn, the Lions defensive coordinator, and Kevin O'Connell, the Rams offensive coordinator. So those are the guys that we know that the Broncos have filed paperwork to interview them.
And even though they don't have to file paperwork, you can throw Doug Peterson on that list. He will interview with the Broncos.
Okay, which... we kind of assumed that.
There's reports from yesterday saying he will end up, quote unquote, interviewing with the Vikings and the Broncos.
And I would assume Brian Flores will probably be on that list at some point too. I would think.
He should be.
If he's not, he should be. And so right now for the Broncos and the other teams that are looking for head coaches, there could be more competition because we could find out by the end of this week what Cam McNair. And what the Texans are going to do with David Culley. The sense is that Culley's probably going to stay, but there are reports that they're kind of going through this week of evaluating whether or not they want Culley to come back as their head coach. So that is something that another team could be added to that list mm-hmm. before the end of the week.
I would keep him there because I don't really think you can indict him as a head coach with what you, like we talked about things Vic was saddled with the situation he was saddled with in Houston. I can't judge him one way or another. That team played really well over certain stretches of games that they ended up losing and played extremely well in games. They rattled the Chargers. They just throttled that team. And
you had to go out and try to win games with a rookie quarterback in Davis Mills and Tyrod Taylor playing part of the season. Then eventually they just said, let's just go with Davis Mills and call it good.
And anybody they had that was worth anything is
no Deshaun Watson
was trimmed. Yeah. Salary was trimmed. You know, I think their best defensive player was Bradley Roby at times, which is not saying a lot. I love him as a Buckeye, but as a pro, he's been So I don't really know if I would do that, if I would make that move, if I'm the Texans.
Considering the cupboard was pretty damn bare, I thought David Culley did a decent job there.
We were talking about Brian Flores. I did see on FanSided, the Chargers blog there. Chargers' worst nightmare is Brian Flores, head coach of the Broncos. If Chargers fans are saying, yeah, we shouldn't want this guy to be hired there, that's not a bad move. To at least interview the guy.
You've got to talk to him. And he had interviewed for the Broncos job before when Fangio got hired.
We talked about Brian Callahan, Bengals OC.
Mm-hmm.
Does he fall into the Hackett, Bieniemy, Leftwich? Because he's not the offensive mind. That's Zach Taylor. And he's also got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. That makes his resume look really good.
Yeah.
He falls into that category, right? With those other three guys, like how much is he actually doing with this quarterback and this offensive-minded head coach?
It's the chicken egg thing. Is it the great quarterback or is it the great offensive mind that's making all this happen?
Yeah,
and I tend to think it's usually the great quarterback that you know you can have a scheme, but you have to have players that run it,
mm-hmm.
and those guys all have quarterbacks that can clearly do that. We're talking about the Broncos' offensive line. And Graham Glasgow, yes, who's still a member of the Broncos. It doesn't seem like he...
Shockingly.
He's a little bit become...
He's the new Bryce Callahan.
He's the new Bryce Callahan. We assume that he plays for the Broncos still. Well, Graham Glasgow, the Broncos, they've reworked his contract. They reduced his base salary from $8.4 million to $3.1 million with a chance to make up $1.4 million in playtime incentives. This is from ESPN's Field Yates. He played just 7 games. This past season, by the way. Remember, he also had the heart condition as well, diagnosed as atrial fibrillation, which sidelined him for 2 weeks.
For week two. It sounds like they've saved themselves $5 million.
Yes.
Cutting his salary and then a playing time bonus, which they're not going to have to pay next year.
Yeah. And if it works out where he can come back and play and be a contributor, great. But that's a smart move by George Payton. To get that salary down for a guy that you don't know how much of a factor he's going to be for the Broncos in 2022.
And it's respectable for Graham Glasgow to go, yeah, okay.
Okay, it's fair. That's fair.
There's guys that just be like, nah, man, I signed this deal. You're paying me.
Finally, we want to get to the decision from yesterday regarding the Broncos ownership that the last hurdle for the Broncos to be put on the market was taken away yesterday. In Denver's 2nd District Court, when Judge Shelley Gilman ruled that late owner Edgar Kaiser's right of first refusal provision, you can't transfer it. It was a 41-page ruling, according to the Denver Post, and Gilman wrote, the right of first refusal between Edgar F. Kaiser Jr. and Patrick D. Bolin is no longer valid or enforceable in any respect. That now Joe Ellis, Broncos president and CEO, can sell the team without interference from ROFR Holding. And that was the group that had the rights that were transferred over to them mm-hmm. from Edgar Kaiser's estate to have the chance to match an owner or match an offer for the Broncos with their own group that would want to buy the team. And there was the feeling from the get-go it was not going to fly, that it was not going to be something that was going to be upheld in court. And it was filed last May. The Broncos asked the court to rule that Kizer could not transfer his right of first refusal to another party, and that the ROFR disappeared upon Kizer's death in 2012, and then when Pat Bowlen died in 2019. It was created by Kizer in 2005 and claimed it in 2020, still had a right to match any offer if or when the Broncos are put on the market. So that has now been put to rest.
Yeah, I kind of always thought that as soon as he died, that was kind of my very, very limited understanding of FORF, right? I was like, doesn't that go away when the guy who holds it dies?
And then the other guy that was involved in that agreement also dies?
Yeah.
But to me, when looking, I don't...
Who
I'm
are
like
you going to refuse, or how can you refuse if you're both,
right,
you know, gone?
And if it's Edgar Kizer who had it, is that, I mean, you're transferring that to your family to
right.
have that? You had sold the team.
Now, if that's a condition of selling it, that your lineage reserves the first right of refusal, then yeah, it still stands. But from my understanding, there wasn't
no
that particular wording in the contract.
Which is kind of like a placeholder, a holding,
right.
I mean, company's probably not the right word, but an entity that was put in place, at least Kizer thought, that would allow those still involved with him
mm-hmm.
to have a chance to match any offer for the Broncos. But when both Bowlen and Kizer died, that really went away. So, all right, 8:22. We'll take a break. We'll come back. It's a Wine About Wednesday with Talon Wine. Something you want to complain about today, get it to us on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340. Coming up next, we'll talk some Nuggets with Katie Wingy from Altitude. That's on the way on the Jim Davis Show.
Craptastic.
That's just crap.
The team presents the Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, the team. It's Nuggets Talk with Altitude Sports' Katie Wenge on the Jim Davis Show.
With us on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, she covers the Nuggets for Altitude, Katie Wenge. Katie, how are you?
I'm hoping that last night was a dream. I woke up this morning and I couldn't believe that the Nuggets had given up a 25-point lead and they had lost to the Clippers in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, it's true, Jim.
Sad but true. That the Nuggets
yes.
cannot hold a 25-point lead last night, and look, perimeter defense, once again, an issue for the Nuggets. It rears its ugly head. Some less than stellar shot selection. Can't make a three to save themselves last night in the second half either. Just, it almost seemed like when they get up by 25, it's like, okay, let's fly the banner on this one. Mission accomplished, game over, and the Clippers put up that as a 21-1 run that got them right back in the basketball game.
Yeah, I think it was 30-7 if you added up the run that they made to come all the way back and end up winning that game. It was late in the third through about a couple minutes into the fourth quarter. So the Nuggets have started developing a little bit of a trend in growing big leads and then giving them up in the second half. And that's obviously concerning if you're a Nuggets fan. And it's a combination, I think, of a lack of focus, a lack of execution. I'm not sure if I buy that, you know, they just throw in the towel a little bit, or that they're just like, okay, we did our job. We're just going to, you know, throw this one in. So I don't think it's necessarily that, or I don't think that they're getting too confident or too sure of themselves in certain situations. I think that they go away from what works, and I think as soon as the other team starts to make their run, the Nuggets panic a little bit, and they go away from what they know. And I think in this case, you saw how difficult it was for them to get Nikola Jokic the basketball late in this game, and that just cannot be the case.
Yeah, to clarify, 21-3 run, and you mentioned, 30-7 ultimately when they got all the way back into that basketball game last night. And look, Marcus Morris, we know his brother Markieff. Nikola knows him all too well. Marcus Morris, he played a role in this last night. He does what the Morris brothers like to do. Throw a forearm to a Nugget player's head like last night with Austin Rivers. But it seemed like Marcus Morris and his physicality, Katie, kind of eventually helped to get the Clippers going last night.
I mean, a little bit, yeah. But, excuse me, like you said, the guard play, like Amir Coffey, they didn't really have an answer for him in the second
yeah.
half. Reggie Jackson, I mean, he made some pretty big shots. So, I mean, this is a situation where it just was a a combination of a lot of things. I think the physicality, yes, you can always bump up physicality. Excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm still recovering a little bit from my health and safety protocol. The Nuggets need to be able to match physicality, absolutely. But I think more importantly, you have to be able to contain, like you mentioned, to start this from the perimeter. You have to be able to guard guards. You have to be able to keep players in front. And they started hitting shots. They started getting to the basket. They were scoring in a lot of different ways during that run. The biggest way, though, I think, was off of the Nuggets' turnovers, which they were creating. And the Clippers are a good defensive team. Like, that's how they're going to get themselves going.
Altitude Nuggets broadcaster Katie Wingy joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. And they wasted a great game from Aaron Gordon last night. 30 points, 12 rebounds. He had a sensational game for Denver.
Yeah, I was really bummed that it was tainted in the way that it was, because he did everything and more that the Nuggets could have asked of him. I thought his cutting action around Nikola Jokic, and what we've been seeing from teams the last 10 games or so, is a double, triple team all the time, constantly at the Joker, basically daring anyone else to try and beat them on this Nuggets roster. And Aaron Gordon has proved, you know, time and time again that he's up for that challenge, and cuts so well around the Joker. He was hitting jump shots last night late in that game and just flows so seamlessly within the Nuggets offense. And then we know what we're going to get from him defensively. So I think it was maybe a season high in rebounds as well, with 12. So he was all over the floor for Denver, and again, you couldn't really ask for much more from him.
Katie Wingy joining us today on the Team Sports Network. And look, Facu Campazzo's had the chance to start with Monte Morris out. Monte was in the starting lineup last night, had 11 points for the Nuggets. But Facu had did such a nice job distributing the basketball, and he did have 5 assists last night. But you need a little more than just 2 points from Facu Campazzo coming off the bench. Nuggets bench, outside of Jeff Green, didn't do a whole lot last night.
Yeah, I think the bench overall, it just, and I don't want to use any of the readily available excuses, like, you know, they have so many players injured, they've had depth problems, the rotation hasn't been consistent, but like, I don't even, Facu's not really who stands out to me. Like, a guy like Bones Highland that you know can put up numbers, yeah. Coach said that he didn't feel like he had legs after the last game, and he flew in to Oklahoma City day of game again because of an inconclusive COVID test. So his rookie season has been, you know, hills, peaks and valleys, to say the least. Yes, he'd like more scoring from Facu, but at the same time, he's got to be able to have players that he can distribute to and they can make shots, because then I think that opens up his offensive scoring game a little bit more, too. When you have other threats around you, they're going to have to treat them and defend in a different way. So Facu is the distributor for that second unit. I'd love to see him. Him and Jeff Green seem to have this like kind of unspoken two-man game connection. I wish they did a little bit more of that. Anybody on the bench. It could be anybody on any given night. But the depth has definitely been an issue for Denver.
Altitude's Katie Wingy joining us on the Jim Davis Show with, you know, like Bol Bol coming out or Magruder coming in, and Bones Highland having to, you know, kind of hopscotch across the country, and different starting five, it seems, every night, and different bench players you talked about. Is there a role definition issue with maybe some of these guys that are contributing to, you know, you're playing with a different guy on maybe the second unit, and that allows the Clippers run like that?
I don't think it's a role definition issue as much as it's a consistency and rhythm issue. Like, I don't know if it's fair of us, given the way this season has gone, to expect consistency from this team. They have had everything not go their way. They have had players in and out of different lineups. They have had players in and out with health and safety, in and out with different injuries. Their guard play right now is so limited. We haven't even talked about no Will Barton last night. Like, I do think that that was a big factor. Like, Will has had highs and lows and really good games and games where he struggled to make shots, but that's still a scoring threat for you that you have to treat like that, and the team has to honor the other team. So I don't think necessarily it's like players don't know what their roles are. I think more than anything, it's they haven't had a chance to establish rotations. They haven't had a chance to get in rhythm themselves quite yet because they've been so in and out.
Altitude's Katie Wingy with us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. And Katie, So we call this now, is it not COVID? It's you're going through the health and safety protocol. Is that what we're just going to call it that? We're not going to call it COVID.
That's official title.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to call it that dreaded COVID-19 thing that we've seen far too much of.
You can call it whatever you want.
Okay. How are you doing? You sound, I mean, you said when we texted yesterday, your voice was a little rough, but you feeling better and going to be back in the saddle soon?
Yeah, my case was, I had almost all the symptoms, and so I'm still kind of feeling the repercussions of it. I'm almost 3 weeks out now, and I still definitely have a cough, and I have chest pain, and so I'm feeling much, much, much better. I've been back at work. I'm obviously not contagious. I'm testing negative, all those things, but I just don't sound quite like myself yet. So I'm hopeful that I've turned a pretty good corner, and it just is going to take some time and some resting to get back to 100%. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that.
Well, we hope you have continued recovery, and likewise for your colleague Jason Kosmiski, who didn't do the game last night, ended a streak of 2,210 Nuggets broadcasts that he's been involved in, whether it's a studio guy or as a play-by-play guy, going all the way back, 1995?
Start of the 95 season.
Yeah, I remember when Kaz was our affiliate rep for the Nuggets back in the day when they won, 11 games that one year. Yikes, that was an awful year. But yeah, a long streak for Jason coming to an end last night, unfortunately.
He is just the most remarkable person and professional. I absolutely love every time I get to work with Kaz. He's a very dear friend of mine. And he texted me and said, oh, no, the streak is coming to an end, because I texted him checking in on him to see how he was feeling. And he said the biggest thing for him was he's just really tired. Like, the fatigue is a real thing for him. And I almost was like, wait, let's get, we'll figure out, we'll get a monitor to your hotel room and we'll send equipment and make sure that you can get it there. And I just don't think that it was one of those situations. Well, it's going to end, all records are going to end or meant to be broken or however you want to phrase it. And so it was such an incredible, phenomenal run for Kaz. I think that's probably one of the most unbreakable Nuggets records that we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely a big number. And full disclosure, grabbed that number off of your Instagram stories yesterday.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah. Giving credit where credit's
yes,
due.
Yes, absolutely.
So you got that information from Katie.
I saw a question about Jamal Murray and the mileposts that we need to be looking for on his return, and you had a really insightful answer, if you could relay that to us here.
Yeah, so a lot of people, obviously, especially the way that some of the games have been going, we know that we could use Jamal Murray, right? And what we see of him looks really good. He's going through what looks like his normal shooting warm-ups and is making all the shots and looks, like he's getting closer and closer to being ready. But I want to caution Nuggets fans a little bit, because what we're seeing is great. He's progressed a lot alongside the Nuggets staff and trainers, of course, and has been working on the side-to-side movements, pushing off lateral strength and lateral abilities, which is that's chronologically how you work through kind of an ACL rehabilitation. We've seen him windmill dunking, obviously, but the jumping straight up and down, that stuff that he's been working on, now we're talking like jumping side-to-side, which is tremendous. But once you start to hear or see him getting some one-on-one action, some two-on-two, and then three-on-three leading up to five-on-five, that's when he's really going to be close to getting ready. Because I do think kind of the next step in his progress behind closed doors is getting more into live basketball action. And that could take anywhere, from a couple weeks to a couple months, because it takes a while for you to be able to not only get used to how your knee feels and to build up that physical strength and that basketball conditioning again, but also mentally to not have to think about your knee and what you're doing and how your body is acting in those live game scenarios. So as great as it is that we're seeing him make a whole bunch of shots and we know the Nuggets could use that, we don't see the full story. And I want people to know that once you start to see him doing actual contact basketball actions in live game scenarios, then you can start asking the question of is he really close?
Well, Katie, I hope that you're getting closer and closer to full health. Continued success in your road to recovery, and thanks again.
Yeah, thank you very much. So thanks for bearing through my voice this morning. I appreciate it.
No problem. No problem at all. Appreciate it. Thanks. Katie Wenge from Altitude.
Sounded better than mine half the time.
I totally go. She's like, my voice would be pretty rough. Yeah. I'm like, not going to sound that great. I'm like, well, you're going to be
good
in
company.
You'll be in good company. You'll sound probably better than we will. Yeah. All right, 8:38, and Connor McGahee will join us in just a moment. It's a Wine About a Wednesday with Talon Wine. Text or call us your gripes, complaints from sports, or from just your daily life at 970-242-1340. Let's get to...
We're into four down territory on the Jim Davis Show on the team.
All right, start out with first down. The ratings have come out for the college football playoff national championship game. So the ratings came out. 22.6 million viewers, up from 18.7 from last year's title game, but down from 26.9 million in 2019. So a lot of people have been going, oh, see, college football's on the decline.
Yeah.
It's on the decline.
The sky is falling.
The sky is falling. The game was the most viewed show on cable since the 2019 national title game. Football still is king on TV. 75 of the top 100 most watched broadcasts of 2021 were NFL games, by the way. Seven others were college football.
Yeah.
That means that football literally accounts for 82% of the highest watched TV shows of 2021.
And like I said,
I think football's overall health, both the NFL and college,
it's fine.
It's just fine.
You can't dictate that on ratings, because Nielsen ratings are somewhat antiquated to how products are consumed now. Mine wouldn't have been counted in the Nielsen ratings because I watch it via streaming service.
Right.
And I watch Red Zone, so I'm not counted on the particular local NFL game on CBS.
Still consuming,
or Fox.
Just not in the
Still
way
consuming.
That gets measured.
Absolutely. Just look at betting numbers, then you'll know how healthy sports are.
All right, second down. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio had a story out yesterday that talked about some of the reasons why Brian Flores got fired by the Dolphins. One of these stories or rumors is that owner Stephen Ross didn't get the quarterback he wanted two seasons in a row. That Ross wanted Deshaun Watson this season, but the trade fell through. And then Florio claims that Ross wanted Joe Burrow in 2020, but the Dolphins didn't tank well enough to get the number one pick. And that Ross had an issue with Flores coaching the team up to the point where they could not end up with the number one overall pick, or coaching them to lose, I should say. They went 5-11 in 2019. They end up with the fifth overall pick, and they took Tua.
And went 10-6, and then went 9-8 this year.
Yeah.
You hired a coach that won games, and you're mad about that?
And you're mad because you didn't get the quarterback you wanted to get.
And his infatuation with Jim Harbaugh wanting to stay at Michigan, that shows you just how bright Stephen Ross is.
He's an idiot.
Third down. The Pat McAfee Show, which is his sidekick is A.J. Hawk, from a former Ohio State Buckeye. His birthday was on Friday. And so Pat McAfee got in touch with one of A.J.'s former teammates, Bobby Carpenter, and sent the Ohio State alumni band to A.J. Hawk's house to play.
That's awesome.
Ohio State fight songs and happy birthday. It was actually pretty great. And then my fourth down, we've mentioned it a couple times. Start of 95 season, 2,210 straight Nuggets radio broadcasts that Jason Kosminski has been a part of up until last night. Nate Kreckman took over the play-by-play duties for the Nuggets in Los Angeles against the Clippers.
Sorry to see the streak in for Kaz.
Start a new one the other night, or coming up here in a few days.
All right. With altitude, folks getting COVID left and right, what are the plans for Connor McGahee? To keep him protected and safe, a national treasure like Connor McGahee.
Does he just lock in the concave?
We'll find out. He'll join us next on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
We're going to be here a while. Would you like to talk?
Talk to me!
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. Talking Avalanche hockey with the voice of the Avs, Connor McGahee, on The Team.
With us right now on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, voice of the Avalanche, Connor McGahee. Connor, good morning. How are you?
I'm a little tired, but I'm good. Okay. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Why do I even say that to somebody who hosts a morning show? All right, forget I said anything.
It's okay. It's all right, man.
Well, we didn't have to fly in from Nashville to do the show.
Exactly, I mean, I just had to get in my car and drive here 7 minutes and do this. You had to fly in from Nashville, so you had a far more difficult start to your day than yours truly here. I do have to ask you, I'm concerned about Connor McGahee. You are a national treasure, sir. I'm worried about protecting you with this recent altitude COVID, epidemic that's going on. Kosminski goes down last night, ends his long streak. We just talked to Katie Wingy. She's still getting over COVID. What are they doing to protect Connor McGahee to keep you from getting this dreaded disease and taking you off the airwaves, sir? I want to know.
I'm like a human hamster. I'm in a plastic bubble.
Okay, you're the bubble boy. Wasn't that Jake Gyllenhaal? It was also what Travolta.
Yeah,
Travolta did some
bubble boy.
Yeah, bubble boy thing too. Well, good. You're in a giant hamster ball. Good. I want to know that you're going to be safe, man.
I appreciate that, Jimmy. Thanks for looking out for me.
Okay.
Much obliged.
We want to keep you off the health and safety protocol list. We don't want that to happen to you.
Hey, me too.
Last night, Avs losing Nashville. Matt Duchene gets a little measure of revenge against his former team with the overtime goal, which was set up by too many men on the ice for the Avalanche. Take us through this, because sure looked like the Avs got shafted on that call.
Yeah, there was actually a decent breakdown from Dave Jackson, who is the ESPN rules analyst. He lives here in town, great guy, and basically trying to go through what Dean Morton saw and what could possibly have led to the too many men. Now, there's that sort of 5-foot rule that is so rarely enforced. There is one still shot where Mikko Rantanen hops off and McKinnon is maybe outside that 5-foot rule, but I don't think the Avs touched the puck at that time. And when the arm does go up, they do have only 3 skaters on the ice. So one of those things where, it's tough because, and Mark Rycroft put it in a good place last night. He said, look, if you think that referees too don't want to do their best job and don't take a lot of pride, like, they're going to look back at that and maybe think twice about that. I mean, they're going to be as upset about that themselves as we are too. So on the surface, it does look like a mistake, which leads to a 4-on-3 power play in overtime. But the Avalanche, I know that everyone wants to talk about that last night, but the fact that, again, they're down multiple goals, they come back to tie it not once, not twice, but thrice in that game, with incredible goals from Nathan McKinnon and Cale Makar. To earn a point on the road in Nashville is impressive. Obviously, you want it to win in storybook fashion, like it has all week. But as the man said, sometimes you eat the bar, sometimes the bar eats you.
Absolutely. Connor McGahee joining us this morning. As the Avalanche losing overtime last night at Nashville 5-4. And Jared Bednar said after the game, he said, look, we don't like leaving points on the table. That could turn out to be a valuable point. And, you know, like I said, it's one game does not define a season, Connor, by any stretch of the imagination, in particular in the NHL. But, man, you want to extend that winning streak, obviously, but you also don't like to leave points on the table that you thought you should have got last night.
That is true. I think the other side of that coin could be, Jim, is that you got a point where maybe you didn't have any business getting any, right? And so you get one. You're still in second place. You got 3 games in hand on Nashville. Your winning percentage is better than the Preds. You have fewer losses than Nashville does. So, look, it's one of those things that we'll just store it away. And if we need this as motivation down the road, we'll use it. But in the meantime, you want two. One is not a horrible result by any stretch of the imagination, and you want wins first and points second, and I'll take 1 point over no points, especially in a place that, you know, Colorado really doesn't have a ton of success over the years.
I know that while it's been thrilling to watch the Avalanche come from behind the way they have in these last 5 or 6 games, and obviously the Toronto win was a thrilling game on Saturday for the Avalanche. But Jared Bednar made the comment after the game, Connor, that, you know, we can't keep playing this way, that it's great. It shows our grit, our resolve to come back time and time again, but we have to get off to better starts, because at some point that comeback magic is going to run out on this team.
And you're going to run into other teams that have that comeback magic as well.
Very true.
And or are so good defensively and have goaltending performances. Look, I think it's beyond impressive that the Avalanche were able to put 4 goals on UC Soros last night. Second star of the week in the National Hockey League. Probably a front runner for the Vezina at this point. And again, we go back to the fact that this week alone, the Avalanche have beat John Gibson, Marc-Andre Fleury, Connor Hellebuck, Jack Campbell, and got a point against UC Soros. I mean, those are probably, outside of Andrei Vasilevsky, all the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League. But to your point, you want to know that that tool is in the toolbox that you can use to hop back into a playoff game. But you don't want to overuse it, and you're right, it may not be there when you absolutely have to have it. So you have to establish habits and patterns that put you in the driver's seat more often. I mean, we all remember the New Jersey Devils teams from the 90s. I mean, if they went up 1-0 in a hockey game, I mean, that was it. They needed one, they would shut it down, and then it was over, and the opponents knew that too. Colorado, with the number one offense in the National Hockey League, needs to get to a point where they can sort of impose that on other teams, like, all right, if we get up by 1 or 2, now our defense kicks in and we're able to hold on to that lead. I think that's the one thing, along with the PK, that is left to fix as they get into good habits coming up here in the springtime. So a season is a process, and I think that in particular is going to be the focus over the next couple months for Colorado.
But overall, it's been a really fun run, a fun stretch, particularly with the home winning streak to set the franchise record. Connor McGahee, voice of the Avalanche, with us today on the Team Sports Network. Bowen Byram was in Nashville, didn't play. Jared Bednar was asked after the game why Bowen did not play last night. He said it's personal reasons. Some are speculating that it has something to do with the concussions that he's had to deal with throughout the 2020-2021 season, which the second one ended his season. What are you hearing about Bo Byram and his status?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I really don't. But he had left the team, and when and if we find out why he did and what those personal reasons are, then we will know. But I know as much as Bednar does and anybody else. And I never like to speculate that that's what it's about, because it could be, you know, something completely unrelated. But we were informed just before the game that was the case, and we just hope that everything is okay in Bo's life and the world around him as well.
One of the things I want to talk about very quickly with the time we have left here is about Darcy Kuemper, that while it wasn't a great outing against Toronto on Saturday, that overall the numbers have been really good, from his since the return from the upper body injury that happened in the early part of last month. 7-0, 0.917 save percentage, 4.81 goals saved above expected, seventh best in the league during that stretch. So while there was that game with Toronto that was certainly a little bit of an outlier for Kuemper, he's played pretty well as of late, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you watch, like, take last night, for example. The first two are not great goals. You know, you wish that he could find that puck a little bit easier. But again, it's a results-oriented business, and you look at his record and how the team has played in front of him over the past 2 weeks or so, and that's what matters most. I think in the Toronto game in particular, and then again last night, as Bednar would say, he'd like to see him make at least one of those saves. And Darcy will be the first one to tell you that he'd like to make that as well. But there is definitely a room for improvement for Darcy Kuemper. He knows that. And again, we'll put that in the box of things to improve on for the Avalanche as they continue their push for the playoffs here in 2022. But you're right. I mean, he has been good, but the way that we've seen him play in the past, he can definitely be a lot better.
Well, that was nice where Pavel Francouz played on Saturday when he came.
Oh, yeah.
Altitude voice Connor McGahee joining us. Since October 26th, Nazem Kadri's played in 23 games. He's got a point in 22 of them. It kind of seems to me, and maybe I'm off base, he feels a little disappointed and embarrassed in himself about how he wasn't there for the team in April of last year. Is that maybe inspiring this run of point streak he's been on?
I mean, who knows what it could be? I mean, it could be a myriad of things. Everyone likes to point to the fact that it's a contract year for him and that he's trying to earn his next paycheck. Whatever it is, it's benefiting him and the Colorado Avalanche. He started last night in second place in the NHL in assists, gets his 16th multi-point game of the season, Only Ovechkin and McDavid have more, and now nobody has more assists in the NHL than Nazem Kadri with 35. So, again, there could be 14 things that are fueling Nazem Kadri at the moment, but I think he's on pace now for 131 points this season, which is absolutely insane. His career best is 61 points back in 16-17, and barring anything, I expect him to break that this year. So for Nazem Kadri, I mean, it could be pride, it could be just wanting to secure your future, could be a bunch of things. But no matter what it is, I'm not picky about it because it's benefiting him and the Avalanche right now.
Connor, always a pleasure. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next week.
Pleasure is mine, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Connor McGahey, radio voice of the Avalanche, joins us every Wednesday on The Jim Davis Show. All right, text or call us, 970-242-1340. Coming up next hour, we'll talk with Trevor Baskin, coming off a career-high best 33 points in the win against Black Hills State for the Maverick Men. Also next hour, we'll talk with the voice of the CSU Rams, Brian Roth, after the Rams lose their first game of the season, upended by San Diego State this past weekend.